Hi, everybody. Today is Monday, June 16th, 2025, and our friend Professor Ted Postel is back with us. Welcome back, Ted.
Oh, nice to be back. I'm a nuisance with the video. Sorry.
No problem. Ted, let's get started with what's going on between Iran and Israel. Something so much unbelievable, what's going on. And for the people in that region, it's unbelievable. When you look at the way Netanyahu started, he said that he's going to destroy the Iranian nuclear program. Because the main reason of this attack is the Iranian nuclear program. And Donald Trump, he was negotiating with Iran, and he said he gave the green light to Netanyahu to attack Iran. Do you understand what's going on with the case of Iran? Trump administration, Netanyahu going ahead, and you're taking that.
Well, I hate to start out by saying this because this man is obviously a criminal who does not want any kind of progress. He really wants this war with Iran. And as I'll show shortly or later, he can't win it. I mean, he can't achieve what he's trying to achieve unless Iranian society is somehow far more unstable than he's betting on. I don't understand the situation in Iran very well, to be honest. I have friends from Iran, but they're immigrants and they're out of the country, and they're not fans of the current regime, but that doesn't make them, attacking a country is historically results in people coming together in a reaction to it. I don't know if this is what's going on in Iran, but my guess is this is what to expect. The history of these attacks on political leadership is now it's disturbing, but he killed the man who was negotiating with Hamas, last year in a brazen attack while he was in Tehran. And this time he killed the guy who was negotiating with the United States. This is like, I don't know, it's like mafia or you don't kill people who you're supposed to be negotiating with. It's counter. If you're truly trying to find a way to avoid war, if you're not Ivan the Terrible, where you invite people into your home and into your palace, and then you poison them because they're adversaries. If you're not of that mindset, then you understand that you can't be killing the people you're negotiating with if you're trying to reach some kind of non-violent outcome. And it's abundantly clear that this Netanyahu is trying not only to have a war, this was an unprovoked attack, but he's trying to do everything he can to make any kind of negotiations impossible. Even if the United States manages to get its own act together and reach some kind of agreement with Iran, the Russians, in particular Putin, has been doing a very good job trying to bring the Iranians and the Americans together to reach an understanding, which incidentally, given that Trump is in so much political trouble due to all the collapsing foreign relations efforts that he's been trying to implement, and of course the chaotic, the near uprising that's occurring domestically in the United States, understandably because of his unbelievably cruel attacks on immigrants in the United States, you know, he's in a lot of trouble. And I just don't understand, you know, if he has any sense of where he's at this point. He should be furious with Netanyahu, who's just undermining him like crazy. And this, you know, this AIPAC, this American-Israeli Public Affairs Committee is also out of control. And as I've made, as I mentioned in this and in other discussions on the internet here, I come from a Jewish background. I don't practice it much, but I'm appalled by this. I don't want this in any way associated with me. This is a genocide going on in Gaza. This is an unprovoked attack on Iran. This is playing with World War III. And, you know, the potential for this to escalate into a regional war, you know, yet alone a global war, is very high. And it's particularly problematic given we also have a war in Ukraine between Russia and Ukraine going on, where things are, you know, also very unstable. And in fact, right now, I think the Russians are crushing the Ukrainians even more quickly and more dramatically than they have been in the last few months. And so we have a totally chaotic situation with regard to military activities going on. And the chances for escalations in either or both places is potentially quite high. And Netanyahu's attack, the timing of the attack, was literally one day before there were supposed to be discussions between the Americans and the Iranians with the help of the Russians. So this guy needs to be stopped. And the way to stop him, just stop sending Israel munitions, period. Just stop. Israel is not going to disappear if that happens, but it will not be able to do the level of murdering that it's now doing. So my position with regard to the American, what the United States should be doing, we should just stop sending them materials for warfare, and that'll cut them down quite a bit. But I'm afraid that's an unrealistic position to take, because we have, you know, the Western political leadership is brain dead. And in fact, I am very suspicious. I have not had the time to sit down and do a military exercise, but I am extremely suspicious that the Israelis do not have the long-range air refueling to execute these attacks on Iran. So my guess is that they're getting foreign help. And there was a little story, I don't know how accurate it was, that there was a German air refueling tanker that somehow inadvertently left its what's called the IFF beacon on, and it inadvertently got identified as a German, tanker, which is not out of the question given this Merz, the leader in Germany. He's so out of his mind wanting war with everybody, as far as I can tell. And wouldn't surprise me if air refueling is going on from American aircraft. I don't know, but it's just hard to see how Israel can project fighter power over Iran without the help of very substantial help of air refueling that is almost certainly well beyond their capacity to do that, their logistics capacity. I suspect we'll find out about this sometime in the next days or weeks, but this is not an incident where nobody is, outside of Israel is involved. The Europeans are almost certainly involved, and certainly the Americans are involved. And to make this statement that somehow we the Americans have no involvement, as Secretary of State as our Secretary of State, I'm blocking his name now.
Marco Rubio.
Marco Rubio, I'm sorry. As Rubio just said, it's just, nobody can believe that. I mean, just because of the basic facts that are already known. So I don't have much to say that's politically sophisticated relative to many other people who would be more sophisticated in their comments than I am on this matter, at least. But it's out of control, and it's out of control because the leadership from the outside has not played a role that they're obligated to play. You know, someone's got to stop this. Trump is the one who has to stop this, because he's the one who's feeding all these resources to the Israelis. Other countries are feeding support of one kind or another, Western European countries is my guess, but they're not as critical as the United States. The United States has a tremendous amount of material that it's providing to Israel. Incidentally, I think this is also having, it's a death knell. It's an additional death knell, I should say, an added death knell for Ukraine, because they're also consuming large amounts of material from the United States and Western Europe. It's already, the material they have is very inadequate. And of course, their forces, more important than the material, is their forces are being slaughtered at a fantastic rate. They have no chance of fighting back, given what they're facing. And you have another government, a neo-fascist government, which, I mean, when I say another neo-fascist government, I'm talking about a government other than Israel. This Ukrainian government that is killing its own people at an extraordinary rate, because there's no hope of stopping the advance of the Russian forces. I've used this analogy in the past, but I think it is really quite relevant. It's the analogy of Hitler sitting in his bunker in Berlin, refusing to surrender to the oncoming Russian forces, which are in the process of slaughtering a very large number of German army, part of the German army. I think something like 30 or 40 or percent or more of the German casualties, deaths and casualties, occurred in the final weeks of World War II, when the Russians were just pouring in on them. And there was no reason for that, except that, you know, he was a maniac. And in fact, he ordered Albert Speer, his chief guy running the economy, to destroy the rest of Germany's economy. But Speer did not follow the order. And we look at Zelensky now in the in Ukraine. He's just advocating the complete destruction of a whole generation of Ukrainian young men for no reason at all. And it's been going on for a long time, but it's accelerating now at a high rate. And then you have this guy Netanyahu, who's destroying, I mean, if you're if you have any interest in Israel as a country, I mean, this doesn't mean you have to support the idea of destroying and suppressing Palestinians, but, you know, I have friends there. And I don't in any way support the government there, not in any way. But if you have any concern about Israel surviving into a future, you look at what this Netanyahu's doing, and he's destroying it. I mean, the economy, I don't see how this economy can ever recover, I think. And I don't see how they can survive the justifiable repulsion that the rest of the world is reacting, you know, is expressing with regard to their murderous genocidal attacks on these Gazans, innocent Gazans. You know, they are literally like they remind me, actually, I'll tell you a little, maybe a bit, they remind me of a friend of mine who I visited Israel. He was a good friend, and he insisted on taking me around, even though I, you know, and we were on this plaza near the Wailing Wall, where these people come and pray, and the plaza is elevated relative to the place where the people go down from this plaza and pray. And I grew up in an Orthodox Jewish community, and I hated these people. I mean, they were you were either a member of their tribe or not. You know, they didn't care about anybody. So I said to Reuven, you know, very charming, unbelievably charming man. And Reuven said, "Oh, come on, Ted, come on." And so finally, I very reluctantly agreed, and we start walking down. And I said to Reuven, "You know, I can't tell you how uncomfortable I am here, Reuven. I feel like I'm stepping back 5,000 years." And he says to me, "Oh no, much further." So his attitude was not unlike many of the Israeli friends I have. You know, these people are crazy. These absolute religious fanatics, to be compared one-to-one to these absolute Islamic fanatics who go around murdering innocent people, they have taken over the government there. And Netanyahu has facilitated this because it's in his personal interest. And I just don't, you know, I'm beside myself watching this. It's hard to see, but there's nothing to do beyond look at it and make observations. I have some observations to make about what is going on. They're not especially profound, but I think the Israelis made several strategic mistakes, which I'm sure Netanyahu was warned about. I mean, if you go and you attack the residents of a city, like the Israeli attacks on residents in Tehran, you open the door for a retaliation in kind. And it's really not in your interest, if you're Israeli, to provoke the Iranians to attack your population centers, because the last exchange of missiles, the Iranians were trying to stick to military targets. And those military targets are not heavily populated. And even if they have population around them, there's not going to be, things will tend to fall closer to the military target, and there will be less unwanted injuring or killing of civilians. And what the Israelis did by attacking people, you know, civilians in Tehran, is they opened the door to a retaliation. And although the Iranian ballistic missiles are not at all very accurate, I think even the more advanced missiles maybe are 1 kilometer accuracy. It doesn't matter. If you want to hit the downtown area of Tel Aviv, which is heavily populated, a 1 kilometer accuracy, CEP is the term that's typically used. 1 kilometer accuracy is more than enough to dump, you know, 1 ton warheads into an area of a few square kilometers. And if it's a built up area of a city like downtown Tel Aviv is, you're going to do significant damage. And, you know, 1 ton warhead, you know, would probably have to hit a big building to do, you know, to cause a collapse of part of it. We see images of large buildings where areas of the buildings are collapsed, but the shockwave the diminished shockwave goes easily out to 150 meters or 200 meters. It's enough of a shockwave to break glass windows at very long range. And now, if you're near a glass window, you can be killed or injured. If the glass window shatters, that's enough blast pressure to knock something off the stove. It can initiate fires, not like a nuclear weapon would, but so it's not surprising that we're seeing fires, small fires, which of course the civil defense is able to deal with because it's not a nuclear attack where everything's on fire. But you're causing a lot of general damage, and if you have thousands of these ballistic missiles, which some reports claim even tens of thousands, I have no idea if the Iranians have this number. That's a lot of stuff to be dumped into an urban area. It won't level the urban area. I mean, it's not as if, you know, you won't turn it into rubble like a massed air attack that of the kind that was executed during World War II, but you will do a lot of damage. And, that's not going to be easily absorbed by Israel. I mean, it's so I think the attacking of the civilians and cities was an extremely short-sighted thing to do. And my guess is that Netanyahu was warned about this by his military. I'd be very surprised if someone in his military didn't say, you know, you're going to open the door to a counterattack. Now, if the Iranians choose to escalate to attacking civilians, that's their choice, and then we can make a big deal about it. But if we attack the civilians in Tehran, it's going to be a given that they can and will attack our civilian population. So he must have been warned about this. It's just hard to believe that the Israeli military wouldn't have warned him. And as for attacking the nuclear program, that's a joke. This program is buried underground. And, with all this talk about earth-penetrating warheads, this fast and loose talk, they cannot be effective against properly designed and built underground structures. And there's no doubt in my mind that the Iranians have built properly designed underground structures. Those are not uniform walls of concrete and steel. They are a matrix of multiple walls. And let me just show you this. I mean, it's kind of interesting to see. Can you open one of the PDF I have that has the title of observation? There it is. Great. If you go to slide 12.
Well,
12. This is the title of a paper I just looked up a few days ago, yesterday, I think. No, the day before. Analysis on deflection of projectiles penetrating into composite concrete targets. Notice the authors are all Chinese, which should not surprise you if you were a person who was well-educated and unprejudiced. China is now filled with highly educated engineering expertise. And these people are experts in protective structures. Now, if we go to the next slide, it shows a concrete structure, an icon of an incoming penetrating shell, and a diamond-shaped concrete slab. So what you're looking at is the cross-section of the concrete slab, and it's got a length. When this penetrating bomb hits the surface of this concrete structure, the bottom of the bomb gets slowed up preferentially relative to the top, which is in air, and so it tends to swing over, causes the bomb to develop an angle. And in the next slide, let's go to the next slide, you can see what the effect is. It causes a change in the direction of the munition. And in the next slide, I show you just an example of one of their tests. What you're looking at in the center is one of their diamond-shaped materials. Of course, the whole structure would be permeated with these diamond-shaped structure. And then in the next slide, it shows you the effect of that structure on a penetrating munition. The penetrating munition was shot directly, vertically, at the structure, and you see it was deflected a tremendous amount by the diamond-shaped structure. So the United States and the Israelis are facing these kinds of underground structures. They don't have any chance of reaching the underground shelters in which Iranian centrifuges and equipment for working on nuclear materials are. I mean, the United States has this bomb called the MOB, the Mother of Bombs. It's a silly name, and it's a 30,000-pound bomb. Only the B-2 is capable of dropping it. But yeah, presumably you could take other. It's just so massive. And they claim, the U.S. Air Force, claims that it has a penetration depth of 60 meters into the ground. That's like 200 feet. If you look, I have no idea whether these numbers are accurate, but there's a reference I found that says Natanz is the structures under the ground are 80 meters underground. Now, if the bomb could penetrate 60 meters and then detonate at 60 meters, it could actually potentially do enough damage that a cavity below could be shattered by effects like the expanding concrete that's spattered out. So this could, in theory, in simple-minded theory, shatter a small section of tunnel. But of course, you have to know where that tunnel is, and we don't. And you'd have to destroy lots of tunnels. And apparently we only have 20 or 30 of these bombs. That's not going to be enough for Natanz. And more importantly, if that bomb has a 30-degree angle instead of going vertically, it's actually, it, it could actually go through multiple and come back up out of the ground. In fact, I've talked to people who are experimented with these kinds of weapons, and they've talked about, you know, they have an impacting, you know, they have an experiment where they have an impacting penetrating a bomb design, and the damn thing hits the ground, goes into the ground, and ricochets up and comes right out of the ground. So so all this simple-minded bragging about your ability to attack these underground structures is nothing more than that. And the Israelis don't have anything like these kinds of penetrating bombs. They do have penetrating bombs, and they were able to kill this leader of Hezbollah in Lebanon with multiple weapons of that type, but they are not going to work against a properly constructed concrete, reinforced concrete structure of the type that the Iranians are building. So so we're hearing now, who knows how accurate the sources are, but I can tell you they're accurate because we know the science. That all of a sudden people are saying, oh, gee, these attacks on the Iranian nuclear program don't look like they've been so successful. Well, they're not going to be successful. They can't do anything about that. So all they can do is attack above ground structures. They can try to suppress the air defenses of Iran. It's hard to know how well they can do that. Apparently, there is, again, I can't be sure of the accuracy of this, but apparently they somehow succeeded in some kind of cyber attack on the integrated air defense. That's at least a claim, which caused it to be not functioning very well in the initial attack. But there are reports that it's now functioning again, and that the Israelis failed to destroy a lot of the actual air defense radars because the Iranians, like the Russians who sold them the system, have designed decoys, radio transmitters to draw fire that the radars would normally draw. So I don't know, again, I don't know how well operated those decoys were, but if they're operated skillfully, and there's good reason to believe they would be, because not only would the Iranians are sophisticated militarily, but also their sponsor, the Russians, are very sophisticated with air defenses, as we've seen in Ukraine. And they would have provided training and tactical advice on how to effectively use these systems. So it's really, it won't be a surprise if they have not, if the Israelis have not effectively suppressed the air defense system. There are surprises for me, and I'm not sure they're correct, but there are claims that F-35s have been shot down, which I have to tell you is a big surprise to me, is remarkable to me, if it's true. And first of all, it's not a minor loss, because those F-35s are going to provide the Russians with extremely valuable additional information to further add to the capacity of their air defense systems and air defense systems that they're providing to their allies. But, you know, when you have a stealthy aircraft like an F-35, it is hard to see, but of course it does need electronic support, does need jamming support. So I'm surprised that there was not adequate jamming support to keep these aircraft protected. And I'm also surprised that they were able to hit the aircraft, because you typically illuminate the aircraft with radio signals from the ground, and the reflected signal is what the interceptor homes, is how the interceptor homes on the airplane. And the reflected signal that the interceptor sees can be made to be very small. So it's very, so even if you're tracking the airplane, it may be very hard for you to actually hit it and damage the airplane. So if they have managed to shoot down two or even one, but they're now saying two or three of these F-35s, that's big news. That's, and these planes are not cheap, because when you buy them, they cost $100 million each. But what they don't tell you is that if you want to operate them, they cost $500 million each. Because the cost of maintaining them over a lifetime, and they don't fly much, because they're so maintenance hungry. You need so much effort to maintain them. These are not cheap things. These are not cheap military equipment. And this should be a warning to lots of countries that are buying these airplanes. I would think twice before I bought a bunch of these planes, because they're going to be hangar queens, because I can't afford to operate them. And this could have some significant implications for other countries that have been purchasing this airplane. I don't know. We'll see in the next few years. But if you can shoot these planes down with air defenses, that's news that's going to be taken very seriously by countries that are thinking of purchasing this plane from the United States. So it's an interesting situation. Not yet. We don't have enough information to really understand how this whole thing is going to play out. But Iran is a big country. It's 90 million people. Israel's a country of 10 million people. Iran is a very diversified, advanced country. It's highly sophisticated, a very large number of highly educated people. I mean, I have personal friends I know from MIT who are Iranian. You know, these people were, I mean, very, very sophisticated people. I have one friend in particular, I think of, I'd be always joking with, because when I was there, the Shah was in power, and he was obviously a fan of the Shah, and I wasn't. But we would have all these philosophical, I mean, this guy was just an incredibly deep thinking philosophical guy. And, we got on famously. It didn't matter that we disagreed. And, you know, it's a culture that produces very highly educated people. And I'm sure they lost a lot of them with the more extremist elements taking control of the government, extremist in a different way than the Shah was, of course. But, this is not a country you can play around with. They've demonstrated a tremendous capacity to develop technology that is really problematic for potential adversaries. They have cruise missiles, which have artificial intelligence homing. No question about it. I have an analysis of that I could show people if they were interested. They demonstrated that against the Saudis when they attacked the oil processing site.
It's called Aramco. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sorry. I'm an American redneck. I don't know what names or anything. You could see from the demonstration of what they hit that they had to have, they must have had. And I have a little simulation of artificial intelligence homing where they use satellite photographs to get an image of the target that they would correlate against. They don't need close in intelligence. You know, it's good enough. And so cruise missiles are potentially extraordinarily accurate. They are vulnerable to air defenses, but if they are used if they're sophisticated enough, air defenses can have a hard time with them. They can, you know, if they fly low enough. And I don't know what the situation with Israeli air defenses are at this point. I suspect the Iron Dome interceptors are pretty effective if they have time to detect and engage a cruise missile as well as a drone, because the interceptors are pretty capable. They're not at all capable against ballistic targets, but against the flying target, they're probably reasonably capable. But, you know, the radars, you know, they may operate at frequencies where radar absorbing materials can be very effective. And the Iranians would certainly know what frequencies to use their radar absorbing materials on, and the radar absorbing materials are available. You know, you don't have to produce them directly. You can buy them on the open market. Anybody who has a ship that has radars on it has to have radar absorbing materials to reduce unwanted reflections from the operating radars and things. This is stuff that's commercially available everywhere. So, you know, it doesn't look to me like this is a long-term war that was a wise thing for Netanyahu to start. And, you know, I only feel bad that people are dying unnecessarily. Iranians and Israelis, you know, and God knows who else, are dying because you have somebody who is supported by other people who are 10,000-year-old extremists, religious fanatics, because he's not doing this on his own. This is not just Netanyahu. That these people are causing deaths and loss of wealth for no reason at all, because nothing can come out of this that's going to be beneficial for anybody by any way you measure whatever your values are. You're not going to win if you're Israeli. You're not going to win if you're Iranian. You're just, everyone's going to lose. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Ted, what was somehow of concern is that the United States has canceled talks with Russia about improving bilateral relations, which were agreed in April. And as Maria Zakharova pointed out, in Russia, it seems that even with the case of Ukraine right now, the complications, then the war somehow, some sort of war between Iran and Israel, the Trump administration is somehow, it's putting an end to the planet. Does he really care about what's going on? It doesn't seem that he knows what's going on.
I'm not a sophisticated political observer, but let me tell you what I believe. Caveating this, that you have other people who are much more sophisticated. Ray McGovern maybe is a better person. Larry Wilkinson. It seems to me, again, I'm just trying to second guess, that Trump really cared about the Russo-Ukrainian war. It surprised me because I view him to be, and I think, I'm not trying to call names, but I think he's a narcissistic sociopath. I think he doesn't care about anything. You know, he cares about very little. And, I was surprised to see that I think he does care about this, the Russo-Ukrainian war. And he does seem to genuinely want to normalize relations between the United States and Russia, which incidentally, I would like to see as well. I think this would be a good thing for the world, not only for the security of the United States and Russia. However, he has no ability to strategically think. Whatever is in front of him at the moment is what he's focused on and what he's reacting to. So So rather than focus on the, for example, the initial talks where, is it Witkoff? I think it's Witkoff, is the, where Witkoff very impressively negotiated with the Russians, and he understood their position, which is not hard to understand. I mean, if you know, it's hard to understand if you're Mertz or you're Macron or you're Starmer because you're brain dead. But Witkoff is obviously a very intelligent man, and he understood exactly what the Russians told him. And when they cut off intelligence and munitions to Ukraine to get their attention, that was the right thing to do, and he got their attention. And had he continued that strategy, I mean, he could have turned it back on and then turned it back off again, or, you know, if he really stuck to his guns and made it clear that he was willing to eventually turn it off completely for, you know, forever, he would have gotten somewhere, I think. They would have had no choice but to negotiate. But he's trying to play a game. You know, he's worried about his political extremists in the Congress. He's got, Graham is claiming that he has 80 senators who would vote, which, if it's true, it could be. It really shows you what a bunch of ignorant fools we have as senators in the Congress, because these people are in a position to educate themselves. I'm fed up with politicians who have these positions and they claim they know what they're doing. I saw enough of this when I was in the Pentagon. I saw these people who were totally ignorant. If they read a newspaper or a book, they would know that what they were saying was silly. And that included the chief of naval operations, who I advised. And I'm fed up with all of them. They're all captured by the intelligence community, which feeds them garbage, and they're not smart enough or well-informed enough to know what they're being told. And, you know, there's no excuse. You know, this guy Mark Kelly, who I had a little bit of going around with when Tulsi Gabbard was being assassinated in the hearing for her. I mean, he's supposed to be a military officer. He was a Navy pilot. When I was advising the chief of naval operations, he was a young naval officer. I have no use for this guy. You know, he goes around suggesting that I didn't know what I was talking about when I tried to talk to his staff and wouldn't talk to me. These guys are part of the problem. And if they're going to, Lindsey Graham has got Trump afraid of these people. And that's also affecting his behavior. But I just don't think Trump has the strategic vision to know how to deal with the political forces that are pressuring him. And I've already made it clear what I think of him, so I won't go into that again. But if he had a strategic vision, given his position, given that he has all this leverage, which is an accident of the political environment in the United States at this time, he is in a strong position to just say to these people in the Senate, "Don't mess with me, I will make you unelectable." He does have that ability, but he doesn't have the focus to say to himself, "Look, I threaten all kinds of people about all kinds of things. Why not threaten these people and get them off my back so I can do what I need to do with Witkoff?" Because Witkoff obviously knows what he's doing and knows how to negotiate a deal. and just turn the spigot off on Ukraine. You saw how fast they moved when the Americans turned the spigot off. Let me tell you how fast the Israelis are going to move if you turn the spigot off. But he doesn't seem to have the strategic vision to do it. In fact, I think my guess is he's in the enviable position of being able to withstorm the political backlash against him if he did that. Because there are a lot of people in the United States, other than these nutcases in AIPAC, who want this thing with Israel stopped. You know, it's not as if AIPAC can do everything. They are very powerful. They own a large part of the Congress. There's no doubt about that. Something has to be done about it in the American political system. I'm an American citizen. I don't want these guys controlling my foreign policy. I don't agree with them. I think they're not concerned about the United States. That's my view of them. I'll be very clear. AIPAC is not concerned about the security of the United States. They are focused only on what they believe is the security of Israel. And incidentally, I'm not sure they're right about what's in Israel's best interest. And these people, as far as I'm concerned, if anybody wants to do things to limit their influence, count me in, because as an American citizen, I just don't like these guys. I don't think they're working in the interest of my country, nor in Israel's interest. So, but my first concern, overwhelmingly, I want to be very clear about, is my country, and also the global stability, because we don't need a global war that's going to cause untold death and destruction. It's just that simple. I'm not as sophisticated about this as Ray or Larry would be, but this is my pointy-headed scientist perspective as someone who's observing the situation.
Your take is amazing, Ted. I can confess that.
Okay. I'm being frank, so to speak.
Thank you so much, Ted, for being with us today. Well, great pleasure. As always.
I hope I've given you your listeners at least some information about the
lot of information,
curviousness of the program. And let's see what happens.
Yeah.
And thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Bye-bye. See you soon. Bye-bye.